There were many important ideas in the book, Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth. I'm going to talk about a few of them today, and then get to the main one based upon the topic of today. And the topic of today is Recycle the Old and Bring in the Gold. More about that later. One of the most important ideas is that divine consciousness, or another phrase for God, is providing for us at all times the items that Christ lists in the truth of existence. Those nine items are growth, nutrition and nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, work, survival, rhythm, all within a system of spiritual law and order. They're always available to us. Another idea is that we need to go to the divine. We need to reach out in thought and feeling and ask for enlightenment to see how we can connect to divine consciousness, which is really the source of our being. That's where we came from. And then when we get into physical bodies and we individuate, then we start to lose sight of that connection. So the idea that if we can reach out in thought and feelings, we're going to reduce the static in between us, the misbeliefs and so on. And this idea of reaching out to enlightenment doesn't say that, oh, wait a minute, I don't want to be a monk in a cave. That's not really what I have in mind for this lifetime. That's not what we're talking about here. And Christ continually refers to the fact that the results of this activity of reaching out in thought and feeling to the divine and to know and understand and experience the divine in our lives is really the way we're going to achieve the health, the happiness, the prosperity, the abundant life that he's promising and says is really our natural right. It's not talking about ascetic, that we have to give up all of that stuff. We can be comfortable and happy and healthy. And that's the real point of connecting to divine consciousness. A third idea is that we either create or block our connection to the divine based upon how we use our own thoughts, our feelings, and our beliefs. Those things either connect us or increase the distance between us and it. So if we create static with our beliefs, then that's kind of a problem. And it follows that this is another idea. And I've read this more than five times as I've gone through the book. I'm into my fifth reading, really more my fifth studying, if you will. And it finally seemed to penetrate. Is that our thoughts are what he means by sowing. We sow with our thoughts, and our emotions are what he means by reaping. And this is the most direct sense and the most immediate, too, of we reap what we sow. We have a thought, we have a feeling. We have a thought, we have an emotion. We have a thought, we have an emotion. That's a pretty quick harvest. And we could look at the harvest and go, whoa, wait a minute. These emotions are not really what I want to harvest. Well, then we need to sow different seed thoughts. And he emphasizes throughout the book the law of cause and effect, or, said another way, we reap what we sow. He says, this is a law that is without exception. Non-loving thoughts yield non-loving emotions, which yield non-loving behaviors and conditions in our lives. That's really very straightforward when we can get that idea. And he's adamant about the fact that there is no effect that didn't have a cause, and there is no cause that does not produce effects. So if we're experiencing an effect, there is a cause. And if we are causing through thought and feeling, then we can pretty, and behaviors, then we can pretty much recognize that there is an effect immediately, perhaps for somebody else, but it's going to come back to us in our harvest. And in order to tie all these ideas together, and there are many, many other ideas that are absolutely fantastic in the book, Christ Returns, but to tie all these together in today's topic, Recycle the Old and Bring in the Gold, I want to talk about another idea. Now, all of us understand the principle of recycling today in daily life. It's emphasized in some parts of the country, some parts of the world more than others. And it is this idea that we recognize that even though an object has apparently lost its value to us, because its original purpose perhaps has been used up, this item can now be transformed or reused or recycled instead of just being thrown away as if it were trash. For instance, it's real obvious in this case of papers and cans and bottles. Those things require a lot of natural resources and electrical energy in order to manufacture those things. When we empty those containers or read that paper or use up that paper, by recycling, and then in that process of recycling, it could be washing, grinding up, liquefying, and then using them in manufacturing once again, we are doing multiple things. We're creating work in that recycling business, if you will. We are reusing our resources and recognizing that there's an inherent value in this stuff, and it doesn't go from being valuable to being totally not valuable. And we reduce waste. And I think, frankly, we're doing a lot of honoring of the planet, Mother Earth, when we recycle. If we're looking to create additional value out of things, I think that's a good vibrational point of view to have. This idea of recycling is not really new news. In fact, it's older than mankind itself. If you were to think, here's a leaf that is falling from a tree when it can no longer perform its functions as a leaf. It's no longer respiring or producing essentials for the health of the tree. And what it does is it drops off the tree and falls to the ground. It dies, falls to the ground, thanks to gravity working on our behalf, right? Gravity, and with the help of other life forms, say microorganisms, bacteria, moles, other things, even worms and ants, can all contribute to its decomposition. And they're reducing it back to its original form. They're bringing it back, bringing it back, bringing it back. All of us have heard this expression. They use it at funerals. Dust to dust. And it's like, ah, that's right. This tree, this leaf, had come out of the soil, and now it's going back into the soil. So this idea of after decomposition and reabsorption into Mother Earth, the energy of that leaf in whatever form it is, you know, the molecules or the atoms or the elements that went into its composition, those chemicals, for instance, they can be used again for the nourishment of the tree. The tree roots are in a position to reabsorb that leaf now that it's been decomposed. Let me put it a little more simply. A leaf that no longer served its purpose went to Mother Earth to be recycled, and it was transformed back into useful forms of energy. That's an interesting way to see it, I think. We can see a similar process of recycling in the old in regard to cows. Cows in a pasture, maybe chickens in a yard, right? Their droppings are so valuable as fertilizer that they've been used, since animals have been domesticated, the droppings of cows and goats and sheep and chickens and other animals have been used over and over for the purposes of fertilizing plants that are being grown. So since we've been agrarian on the planet, this has been a meaningful idea of recycling some product from one end of the animal to help grow other things for our benefit. This idea of recycling the old to get new value, I'll call that new value the gold, has been designed into our world by the Creator. It's so obvious when we start to look at it, we go, wow, this is not a mystery. This is not a cool idea dreamed up by human beings. This has been in place forever. So imagine that the grass in the pasture has a need for nutrition and nourishment. That, as you might remember, is the second element in the truth of existence. And so how does that nutrition and nourishment get provided to blades of grass? By rainwater, by sunlight, by the soil itself, and by the recycling of this stuff that no longer serves, that is being released by animals, animal dropping, and it's reduced and brought back into its original form by microorganisms, and then it can be used again by growing plants. That's an amazingly benevolent system that's been designed for our benefit. Here's another example of the blessings of recycling. I like this because a lot of people have attention on breathing. Breathing is an amazingly wonderful process. A lot of people are taught breathe in the divine and breathe out negative hate or negative characteristics and so on. But I see it somewhat differently. I don't want to be breathing out hate. I don't want to be breathing it out on anybody else, for that matter, I don't want it in my environment. What I really want to do is I want to breathe out blessings. So I have a different view of this process of respiration. We inhale oxygen, and oxygen is essential to our existence. Everybody knows that. And in fact, in 1931, a doctor, Warburg, discovered that cancer cells grow in the absence of oxygen. And he won a Nobel Prize for that. It's like, So oxygen, inhaling oxygen is essential to our existence and our health. We exhale carbon dioxide, which to us is a waste product of our normal bodily functions, cell metabolism and respiration and so on. We exhale carbon dioxide. Plants inhale carbon dioxide, which is essential to their existence. Fortunately, plants exhale oxygen, which to them is a waste product of their normal functioning in their cell photosynthesis and growth and so on. So there they are. Plants bless us by exhaling, and we bless plants by exhaling. Their old is our gold, our old is their gold. Is that a benevolent system? It's amazing. When we respect that and appreciate that, it's like, wow, this God really is an amazingly good God that's been providing these systems for us all along. All of us know what negative thoughts and emotions are, and for some of us, we know them. They can be really powerfully persistent, and they can grab hold of us, and then we get into these mental loops, and we think about them, and we're not able to break free of that loop sometimes. We can't seem to stop them, so we just spin around almost like a hamster on some sort of a mental treadmill that goes around and around, and we start going downhill because we can't break the focus and put it onto something more positive. We understand that these negative thoughts and negative emotions are really part of the human condition. They are part of us. And so it's a question of rising above them, transcending them, learning how to deal with them is what we're talking about here. But we can say that these negative thoughts and negative emotions are more apt to be part of our awareness when our awareness is lower. They're more part of our lives when we are in lower emotional states. I would say that negative thoughts and negative emotions are more appropriate when we're survival-oriented, when our awareness is like, I gotta survive, I'm just trying to survive, everything is a threat to me because I'm in that survival state of life, worrying about homes and bills and mortgages and rents and job security and all kinds of stuff like that going on. Those are the new saber-toothed tigers. And just like a caveman would have been in these lower states of awareness and lower emotional states, worrying about providing food for his family and trying to survive the threats, saber-toothed tigers and whatever else was outside the cave, we can understand survival orientation lowers our awareness. That survival instinct has been designed into us by the Creator. Now, if we didn't have that as cave people, we would, I wouldn't be standing here talking. You wouldn't be there listening. This really can serve us, but we can start to increase our awareness. We can lift our consciousness, and that's what we do on a daily basis, or that's what we strive to do, and that is what I'm talking about today in this Sunday talk. Just imagine for a second, this is kind of a weird situation, hopefully. Imagine if we were in a plane crash. Our orientation would immediately turn to survival, not higher states of being. We wouldn't be thinking of really highfalutin spiritual concepts, we would be, well, let me say that. I think the first thing we would be doing, we would be praying like crazy to be protected as this plane is going to come into a crash landing. But we would be focused on survival, and that's as it should be. Hopefully, none of us, or maybe most of us, are not going to experience anything as catastrophic as a plane crash, but we still can trigger these survival instincts in other ways in our day-to-day life. And the way we do that is we reference our inventory of experiences. Now, depending on our physical lives from the moment we were conceived right on up through gestation, that 9-month maybe period, during the birth process and during our individual childhoods and even teenage years when we're trying to get a handle on who we are and what we are, we would have been more or less likely to have our survival instincts triggered by the way we processed information from external circumstances, family of origin, school, our peers, how people related to us, what kind of church experiences, school experience, playground experiences, sibling experiences we may have had. If we weren't wanted during conception or during that pregnancy and we picked up those vibrations of unwantedness, it seems likely that we could be hypersensitive to signals now coming in from our environments that we're not wanted now, that we don't belong to this group, we don't belong to the family, we don't belong to this clique at school or in church or where Girl Scouts or Boy Scouts. If we lack that sense of belonging and that feeling is an effect, we could imagine that there had to have been a cause. If our pregnancy was problem-filled for our mothers, and they talked about it and felt that way, hot summers, difficult pregnancy, couldn't eat this, couldn't eat that, and on and on and on, we can become hypersensitive to signals from our environment today that we are a problem. And we would try to, unfortunately, this human characteristic of trying to give meaning to things, and certainly as younger children, all meaning centers around us. You know, the universe, or rather the earth, moves around the sun. Well, as infants and small children, we think all the world moves around us. So if something bad happens in our environment, we attribute that cause to ourselves. If we think we caused our mothers this difficulty, then this problem of not being good enough is liable to be alive and well in us and making us hypersensitive. If our birth was filled with fear and pain, I'm no rocket scientist, I'm a man, but I'm thinking all birth is filled to some degree with fear and pain. And if we were firstborn or we were participants in a particularly difficult birth process, we can become fearful when we need to do new things or venture into new environments, just like as a baby, we were coming out of one environment, going into another. We can carry that survival instinct now that says, uh-oh, we're going in to do something new, we're going to go into a new environment, we don't know what's going to happen, and that inventory of fear and pain images rears up to try to protect us from that and alerts our survival instinct. If our family of origin wasn't effective at staying balanced, they were struggling financially or emotionally or physically or something else was wrong with somebody else in the family, to include our parents, then this inability for them to stay balanced is going to wash over us and is going to affect our processing of information as children. And today, we could still be hypersensitive to causing or being a part of what I'll put in quotes, plane crashes, these dramatic, flare-ups, if you will, of anger, of sadness, of trauma, of tragedy within our families. And we can be afraid of that in public settings. We can be afraid of that at home, even when we approach our home for fear that something like that has happened in our absence. Let me just back up and say, here's the kind of disasters that most of us are trying to avoid. I played baseball on my high school baseball team, And on a particular day, I was playing second base. I was a second baseman. And early in the game, there was a commotion over by third base or off the field. And I looked over there, and I realized that my father, who was drunk, had tripped and fallen on cement and had bloodied his head. He had fallen face first onto that concrete walkway, and he was bleeding pretty badly. And there I was, standing at second base, not knowing what to do. And I just stood there. I just stood there in that position at second base. I was embarrassed. I was confused. I was awkward. I probably at that time wished I could have disappeared into the ground or not be there entirely. My father was helped by spectators over by that side of the field, not by me. The only other thing I can remember about that entire incident, before, during, and after, is that shortly after that occurrence, a ground ball was hit to me at second base, easy out, and I didn't put my glove all the way to the ground. I wasn't even present, and instead of it being an easy out, went right through my legs out into the outfield as a big error. Now, I usually have a great recall from events all through my life, even very, very early in life, except for that day. That's all I remember. He fell, me standing there, not knowing what to do, and making an error a little while later. I don't know what happened during the rest of the game. I don't know what happened when I got home. I don't know anything else about that event. It's totally missing from my recall. And when I was writing this, I was sweating drops of sadness that I didn't respond with kindness and caring to my father. So, there, you know, thinking of that event, I had an opportunity to do that, but I didn't know how to do it. Wasn't aware enough that kindness and caring in all circumstances is a good strategy. I didn't know that. I think most of us had to have experiences somewhat like that, maybe more or less dramatic, maybe more or less hurtful. And this brings me back to the main point of this talk: how to recycle the old and bring in the gold. In letter 6 of the book, Christ Returns, Reveal Startling Truth, Christ describes a process that is the main point of today's talk. On page 272 in the book, he lists negative characteristics that we'll want to be healed of. And the way I would phrase it for today, I would say, we want to recycle those characteristics, those energy patterns. We want them to be converted by the divine consciousness, much like Mother Earth recycles that leaf that fell from the tree when it was of no longer service. Now, these characteristics are all related to the ego-driven rejection that is a dominant concept in the book. And Christ is saying that we should notice our reactions and our feelings to these words. Criticism, sarcasm, judgmentalism, rejection, denigration, enmity, intolerance, hatred, jealousy, aggression, violent impulses, thieving, falsehood, double and devious dealings, and slander. And he says the first step to take, in total honesty, because all human beings have these to some degree, it doesn't make us bad people, it makes us people, is if we can face up to that, we're going to be so much better off. And the first step is to write them down on a sheet of paper, thinking about them and feeling them as we do. For me, it is becoming clearer and clearer that these energy patterns, when they're expressed by me in thought or in my words or in my behaviors, in my deeds, they're producing negative harvests, unwanted harvests. So when I plant these energies as seeds through my expression, they're going to be harvested. And so it's easier for me to turn around and add some more things to this list that Christ is laid out in the book. The feeling not good enough, self-rejection, a sense of not deserving, a lack of compassion toward myself, self-disapproval that leads my ego to scream, the only way to overcome it is do more, do more, do more. And a self-consciousness that tricks me into taking my focus off of my connection to divine consciousness and beat myself up. And unwillingness to question my attitudes and or to look for a way to see with eyes of love, hear with ears of love, and speak with a voice of love, which, frankly, I think is our destiny. And so if we are absolutely certain that heads down, all ahead, full, hard work, don't take your eye off of making money and doing certain thing, that's a problem for us. And I would think perhaps worst of all is when opportunities to be loving show up, not taking advantage of those, not taking advantage of an opportunity to display love to our family members, to our friends, to strangers, by allowing the God to work through us. To me, and for me, that is one of the real gigantic downsides, because ultimately, to be Christ-conscious, a person has got to be an effective conduit of God's love. The second step of the process is to take that sheet of paper and lie down and place that sheet of paper on our chests and then close our eyes and reach out in thought. And I'm going to read this from page 272 of the book, Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Close your eyes and reach out in thought to the divine reality, your source of being, which you should now realize is your loving procreator, your true spiritual father-mother, which radiates unstintingly and continually and consistently unconditional parenting love. Give time to quieting your mind until you feel you are moving beyond your own consciousness. Then ask in perfect faith and expect an immediate answer, since you are operating in consciousness, for help in removing, dissolving, overcoming the false and unnecessary rejection ego drives in all the days to come. Emotionally, you make it clear to your spiritual father or divine reality, and therefore to yourself, that you want no more of these ego negatives in your consciousness. You ask for the inspiration and strength to make every effort to avoid or deny them from that day forward. By following this course of action, you are creating a new consciousness form, which now begins to infiltrate and take over your present consciousness. Your intention now becomes your reality. The form and negative characteristics written on your piece of paper and taken to your spiritual father are now in a limbo of rejection in your consciousness. This conscious rejection is also the means of drawing divine power into your consciousness to help you strengthen your resolve and remembrance to discard any impulses which may erupt from the rejected characteristics. Therefore, as you can probably see, the surrender and meditation have set in motion unseen work in consciousness, of which you will probably be unaware until you later wake up to the fact that the characteristics have disappeared. I would earnestly urge you to take the paper of characteristics into meditation several times. Each time you do so, you draw into your own consciousness a further injection of father-mother consciousness life power into your purpose of overcoming and ridding your consciousness of unwanted consciousness forms and forces. When they have been dissolved, they will no longer draw into your circumstances the negative and unhappy shadows which plagued you before. You will be traveling a higher path to freedom. I love that. Christ goes on to say that to complete the process of rebuilding our consciousness and in place of those negative characteristics, and I'm going to read from page 234 to 235 right now, that we must write down on a piece of paper, in gold letters if possible, now you hear the reference to gold, that we can recycle the old and bring in the gold. You must write down on a piece of paper in gold letters, if possible, to give you a sense of beauty and glow about the attributes the golden qualities of divine consciousness of which you want to be possessed by and to express in the future. To be in perfect harmony with your divine reality, your spiritual father, each attribute will be founded on unconditional love and will promote the highest good of others. For no longer will you seek to put down others in order to make yourself feel greater and more self-confident. Your entire consciousness will be directed to affirming other people and building up everything within your orbit. You will seek to nourish, nurture, teach, protect, maintain, fulfill the needs of others, and seek to lovingly establish order out of chaotic, mindless actions. Having written your golden aspirations on your sheet of paper, again, lie down and reach out to your divine reality and ask that the beautiful impulses, the nature of the divine, may gradually spread through your mind and heart and become your own consciousness. When this happens, your soul will be like a baby chick pecking and pecking, breaking its shell to emerge into the wonder of a great big world, to be united with Mother Hen, patiently waiting for her child to rejoin her. This is how it is with me and all other Christed souls. We wait and watch and help the people who long to find out the cause of their emptiness of spirit, who set their hearts on transcending earthly occupations, whose minds are being drawn to higher purposes in life, and who dream of coming into perfect attunement with their own souls and their divine source of being. And it goes on, again, beautifully, beautifully written. I think that doing step number two, which is the writing out those negatives, putting them on a piece of paper, and putting them on our chest, and then go into meditation, and then later doing step number three, where we bring in the golden attributes, we could do that as we do the healing codes, or perhaps other energy modalities that bring us into a meditative state, a quiet state, where we can access divine consciousness. We're getting past our minds, past our human consciousness, past our thinking, and going into this deeper place, our soul space, if you will. I think using that in conjunction with the healing codes could be an absolutely amazing experience. And I would challenge somebody who's really interested in making dramatic changes in their lives to commit to a 30-day process of that, perhaps doing the step two, releasing the negatives, recycling the negatives one time during the day, and calling forth the gold, bringing in the gold another time during the day for a 30-day period in order to judge how fantastically we can grow in awareness to the presence of the divine in our lives for the purposes of healing physical ailments, healing our relationships, healing our financial situation, and overall, of course, healing our human consciousness and making us know who and what we really are. The promise that we can recycle the old and bring in the gold is evident through the book Christ Returns. And frankly, I think if you look at the cores of almost all religions, if not all religions, no matter how they've become distorted with superfluous rituals and other stuff, that underneath it, it was really geared to help us let go of the things that disconnect us, that stand in the way, that block our connection to the divine. This Sunday, it's 4th of July weekend here in the United States, and in America we take this weekend as notice of our 4th of July weekend, that is, our Independence Day. That's a good thing. An even better thing could be that if we could realize our independence from our ego-driven human consciousness, you know, the thing that causes us to want to grab, grab, grab and push other people down or out of the way, or like they're threats to us. Only a human consciousness believes in that sort of thing. And if we can become independent of our ego-driven human consciousness, then we're in a position to reconnect with our source of being, divine consciousness, God, Spirit. And then we're going to know true happiness, true freedom, true joy, and true health and prosperity. That's the gold that is in all of our dreams. That's the gold that's been in every book or story about gold. They may be talking about the metal, but below that, on the real mental and emotional and spiritual level, the gold is our connection to the divine and to know the truth of our being. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer in letter 8. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we should be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.